today to have a number of questions. Going to talk a little bit about some controversial stuff. And before asking good questions here, I want to go ahead and get to these and address these if I can. The first question, I'll take the harder one first. How should we apply the gospel specifically and practically in the current Black Lives Matter and Antifa-steeped situations that are happening across America in the big cities? Well, when it comes to things like that, Black Lives Matter, you know, all of the video that's been out there for quite some time, really since the Michael Brown thing happened when that guy was killed, and now has been kind of reignited by George Floyd. And, you know, that video was horrific to watch, them pinning his neck down the way that officer did, and he died. You know, he was basically, I think, suffocated to death. There's absolutely no excuse for anything like that. But how does the gospel apply to things like Black Lives Matter and Antifa and all that kind of stuff? The stuff going on in the big cities right now, all the rioting and protesting and everything else. The reason our country is the mess that it is over stuff like this is because the church, by and large, in our country, America used to be a very heavily Christian nation. There were a lot of people here who were true believers. America was kind of like the missionary hope of the world. But the fact of the matter is, really, since the Second Great Awakening, since Charles Finney and the Second Great Awakening in the 19th century, and then the rise of really Finney's Pelagian theology and decisional regeneration, the rise of dispensationalism and all this other stuff like that, the impact that has had on gospel preaching has been absolutely devastating. Absolutely devastating. Because the gospel that we're justified by faith in Jesus Christ and not by works and not by anything at all that we do, the clarion call to repent of sin, to turn from sin, to embrace Jesus and to trust in Jesus alone, that message is pretty much gone. And so our nation, for the most part, has gone. The churches have turned liberal and progressive, and they've turned away from biblical authority and the gospel. And so what we're seeing today is the outworking of people who are unregenerate, the outworking of unregenerate people that don't know God and that don't know Christ and all that goes with it. The protesting and the call for the government to do this and to do that and take this action and to disallow this, disallow that, that's all because people don't self-govern anymore. And it's also because human beings are inherently religious. They cannot help themselves. They are always, always going to be religious. And our culture has indoctrinated generation after generation after generation of young people and has taught them all that they're evolved African apes, that they're rearranged pond sludge that has a big brain. And it shouldn't surprise us that people that have been taught that atheism is true and that there's no God, that they are just evolved matter in motion, because we are inherently religious, because we cannot help ourselves, human beings, in the absence of the real God, will deify something else. Since religion has kind of passed out of vogue in this country, what is being deified now? The state. So people look to the state to solve all their problems, when really what needs to happen, what really needs to happen, the only way that this country is going to recover from all of the violence and everything else that's going on, people need to look at themselves and take responsibility for themselves. People need to make the decision that they are going to do what's right. I'm going to take responsibility for myself. If I have problems, if I have nothing, I'm going to go work hard and I'm going to change. I'm going to make things better for myself. I was thinking about, you know, people might look at me and say, well, yeah, well, you're just white privilege. My great-grandfather, Harrison Green Hines was his name. He lived in a tent down by the Ohio River, okay? The Hineses, we lived in Cincinnati until I moved here 8 years ago. But I was telling someone at church about that. He said, where are your ancestors from? I said, well, my great-grandfather, Harrison Green Hines, lived in a tent down by the river. He said, well, at least it wasn't a van down by the river. Thinking about Chris Farley. Remember Chris Farley from Saturday Night Live and Tommy Boy and all that stuff? I live in a van. What was it? Matt Foley, the motivational speaker. I live in a van down by the river. Well, my great-grandfather lived in a tent down by the Ohio River. My grandfather, my dad's dad, was a Greyhound bus driver who lived in a trailer park his whole life. And, you know, my father was the first Heinz ever to go to college. My dad was the first man in any, that anyone had ever heard of that bore my last name, that went to college. My dad went to college and got an undergraduate degree in history, and then he got a master's degree in history, and then he did all the coursework for a PhD in history, but he was not able to finish because I was born. So he had to go get a job, and he sold insurance and did financial planning for like 35 years or something like that. And, but he was a self-made man. My dad was a very well-educated, still is, very well-educated, well-spoken, and successful man. But nobody gave him anything. No one gave him a thing. Okay? My dad went to the University of Cincinnati in the early 1960s on a GI Bill. Okay? So he was an ROTC student. And very shortly after he started doing college, next thing you know, he was in Vietnam. In 1966, for a year. You know, my parents took a cruise across the Panama Canal a few years ago. My mom had been wanting to do a cruise for years and years. My parents had been married for 57 years. She had been wanting to do a cruise forever. My dad was like, I'm not getting on a ship in the ocean. Last time I was on a ship in the ocean, I was on an aircraft carrier in the South China Sea on my way to Vietnam. I'm not getting on a big boat. And, of course, he had a ball. They loved it, you know, taking a cruise. No, my point is, my dad took responsibility for himself and made something of himself. Okay? That's what people need to do today. Stop blaming your problems on people that died 100 years ago, 150 years ago. Okay? People involved in the atrocities that happened in this nation, they're dead, and so are all their great-great-great-great-great-grandkids. They're all gone. We live in the land of the free, the land of opportunity. You want to make something of yourself? You work hard, you can make something of yourself. I have worked with people over the years when I was a computer programmer. I was a programmer before I was a pastor for 11 years. I worked with people who literally came from nothing. I mean, from rags, had nothing. There was a guy I worked with in my first job out of high school at American Greetings, the green card company, and he was the best programmer in the entire information services division of that big company. And someone said, yeah, you'd never know. He actually graduated, when he graduated from high school, he worked in the mailroom. And then the company offered a programming class, and he took it and really worked hard and worked himself all the way up. And he's like the senior best consultant programmer, no college education. He just worked really hard and made something of himself. That's what people need to do now. People are so mad about this and that and white privilege and critical race theory and all this other stuff, and people are protesting this and protesting that, and people want the government to do this and do that and everything else. The founders of this country knew that this grand experiment in liberty would only work if people were self-governing. If people were self-governing, meaning they don't need the government and they don't want the government to take care of them. They don't want anyone to do anything for them because they want to take care of themselves, by themselves. So that's the thing. The thing is, everything that's happened in this country in terms of racial bigotry is sinful, it's evil, it's wrong. Chattel slavery was a grotesque evil. It was a grotesque evil. And the thing is, under a biblical law order, the Old Testament identifies kidnapping, man-stealing, as a capital crime. I agree with that. I think kidnapping should be a capital crime. So anyone that was kidnapped, if the Bible had been upheld, every single one of them should have been executed for doing that. So, yes, I am against racism in that sense, but there's another problem here. There's another problem here. The church has failed miserably on this topic. Race, the way the term is normally used today, it's using the term race in the Darwinian sense of the word. Okay? We don't believe in race in that sense. If we're Bible-believing Christians, there is the human race, period. That's it. That's all there is. There's the human race. People have different skin tones. People have, like, when I registered to vote down here, they wanted me to put down my race. And it was like Caucasian, Latino, Black, and all this other stuff. There were some things listed on there I didn't even know what they were. So I just checked the box that said Other and wrote Adams. That's the only race there is. And, oh, by the way, We had a really good speaker here a few years ago that did a conference. Let me see if I can do the illustration that he did. Let me find it. Yeah, his favorite. One of the most powerful illustrations. He was talking about race in one of his talks. He was a guy from Creation Ministries International, Gary Bates. He held up a white piece of paper and said, "Everybody, this is white. You see me? Do I look white to you?" See, look at me. Look at my hand. Am I white? Not really. I mean, I'm kind of like pink, beige-ish, peach-colored maybe a little bit. I've always told people, Heinz's, we don't tan. There's the lighter colored skin, and then there's pink when we get sunburned. But we don't do tan. Amy's family, my wife's family, you know, she has a German-Polish background. Her skin is like kind of olive-colored, and she'll tan nicely. Some of my kids will tan. The ones that got my skin genetics, they don't tan. They just get sunburned and peel. So that's all I've ever done is sunburn and peel. But what race am I? I honestly couldn't tell you. I don't know. I know the Heinzes came from England in the early 1500s, and my mother's family are Scottish. They have last names that start with MC, like Macklemore, and there's some Taylors and Terrys in there, too, and there's some other last names I don't even know, like, where they're from, really. But what am I? What am I, personally, in terms of race, in terms of my ethnicity? I have no idea, and honestly, sincerely, I don't really care. Because the only thing that I really need to know is that I'm a descendant of Adam. I am not an animal. I'm a human being made in the image of God. And because of that, I need a savior. I need salvation from my sin. That's what everybody needs. Regardless of the lightness or darkness or brownness or yellowness of their skin. Okay? We're human beings made in the image of God. I was thinking about all of the extraordinary people that look different from me that I've known throughout my life. One of my best friends growing up, his mother was Vietnamese, because his dad, like my dad, a lot of my friends' dads were Vietnam veterans, because I was from that generation whose dads fought in the Vietnam War. And his dad had been in Vietnam too, and he had married a Vietnamese woman and brought her back here. And what was he to us? That's who he was. We didn't think about him as being a different race. He just looked different, and he didn't get sunburned as easily as we did. But we didn't think of him as something else. I knew kids that were Greek that had the kind of darker Greek colored skin. Some of them were phenomenal athletes. I mean, just incredible athletes. But we didn't think about that when we were kids. You know, there was an innocence to it. And there were black kids that went to the high school. I didn't think about that either. It wasn't like, oh, there's a black kid and there's a Chinese person or something like that. It was just human beings. We're all part of the same race. We're all part of the same human family. There is one blood in this world. And so really all the stuff about race, it really is the Darwinian concept that they're talking about. They're talking about the different trajectories of human evolution. I mean, do people realize the amount of innocent bloodshed that has happened because of that? You know, one of the saddest things you could ever read about is the story of Atta Benga. Atta Benga was a pygmy from Australia. Here, let me pull up his name here and make sure I spell it right. I cried the first time I ever heard this guy's story. Atta Benga was his name. His first name is spelled O-T-A, Atta, and his last name is Benga, B-E-N-G-A. This guy, it's hard to even talk about this. It really is upsetting to me to even remember it. He was captured. He was captured and put in the zoo in the Bronx in this country on display. Hey, listen, Benga had been purchased from African slave traders by the missionary Samuel Phillips Verner, a businessman searching for African people for the exhibition. He accompanied Verner to the United States. Later at the Bronx Zoo, Benga was allowed to walk the grounds before and after he was exhibited in the zoo's monkey house. That's absolutely horrendous. But why did they think that? Because they believed in Darwinism. They believed in evolution. They believed in the Darwinian concept of race, that these were different trajectories of human evolution, and they weren't as evolved as the lighter-skinned people in Europe or something like that. Absolutely atrocious. What a moral atrocity. That poor guy, you know, he killed himself. I remember hearing, like, hearing the rest of his story. This poor young guy killed himself. He committed suicide. Can you imagine being put on display with monkeys in a zoo? But that's what Darwinism does. That's what that worldview gives us. It dehumanizes people because, well, they're not part of a higher trajectory of evolution from, I guess, better apes or something like that. That's ridiculous. That's ridiculous. And the fact is, Ottobanga, just like me, just like anyone else, no matter what, Asian, from Vietnam, from Africa, from Scotland, we're all descendants of Adam and Eve. We're all descendants of Adam and Eve, and that's all there is to it. So, everyone's life matters. Everyone's life matters. I keep waiting for there to be like a real strong voice for unborn lives matter. How about the unborn? How about the unborn? Especially since the majority of abortions are among the black community. And that's on purpose, by the way. Margaret Sanger, the founder of the American Birth Control League, a.k.a. Planned Parenthood, was a racist bigot. Read George Grant's book, The Angel of Death, if you can find it. Most libraries don't even carry it. Or read Margaret Sanger's book, The Pivot of Civilization, where she talks about black people as human weeds and things like that. Unbelievable. Horrible person. Why does she think that? Because of evolution? Because she held to the Darwinian concept of race? Absolutely horrible. And it's incredible. Planned Parenthood still tries to deny its racist roots. Margaret Sanger was a racist. And what's incredible is that the American Birth Control Review, her periodical that was published in the United States in the 1930s, they published eugenics papers by Nazi doctors here in America. And it's a little known secret, but there are people today in Virginia who were forcibly sterilized by the United States government because they were said to be feeble-minded because of their race. That comes from Darwinism. That comes from that whole ludicrous, absurd idea that human beings are from different trajectories of different types of ape-like hominids or something like that. That's a lie. Every human being, whatever their skin color, whether they are the darkest of the dark or the lightest of the light, we're all descended from Adam and Eve. And we're all made in the image of God. People ask me, what are your thoughts on interracial marriage? I'm like, well, from the Darwinian perspective, there's no such thing as interracial marriage because there's no such thing as race. And the Greek word for race that's translated as race, genos, is not referring to race in the Darwinian sense. That's totally anachronistic to interpret it that way. Genos is simply referring to a person's ethnicity, where they're from, their background. The Bible teaches clearly, Paul said in Acts chapter 17, from one blood he made all the nations of the earth. And people look differently primarily because of the Tower of Babel. Because people that spoke the same languages, once God confused people's languages, and he really confused their languages. And everyone here that's a student of language knows how true that is. People that can't communicate don't want to be by each other. So the different people groups separated into their language groups of people they could have communication with, and they tended to pass on similar looking traits. That's why people in certain parts of the world look a certain way. You know, people from Africa tend to have very dark colored skin. People that live in Asia are kind of in the middle. Their skin tends to be a bit more brown. People that lived in colder areas and people that lived in Europe tended to have lighter colored skin. What does that mean? It means that those people had different melanin content in their skin. That's all. It doesn't mean that they're better or smarter or descended from better apes or something like that. We're all descended from the same two people, Adam and Eve. And every human life, every life is important and matters. And people who have tried to enslave or to devalue people because of their skin color, that is a grotesque sin against God. People don't realize this. If you're racist, if you look down at people because they have lighter colored skin than you, or vice versa, you look down at people because they look different from you, or they have darker colored skin than you, you are grossly sinning against God. Grossly sinning against God. Because man is the image of God, and as such, every human being you lock eyes with, whatever color they are, whatever their intelligence level, whatever their health, handicapped or healthy or whatever, they are worthy of your respect and your love. And we must not allow racist concepts in the church. It is sinful and wrong. And that was one of the great things about the gospel of Christ when it first came along, is it brought people together who would otherwise never have been together. The truth does that. It destroys all those things that separate people from one another. It destroys everything, all of the artificial barriers that people put up between themselves and others. It destroys xenophobia. Being afraid of people because they look different, or they dress different, or they act different from you, or they're more expressive, or they're more quiet than you. Looking down at people for any reason like that is wrong, and it's a sin. Human beings are made in the image of God, and that's why to mistreat another human being is to strike out at God. It is to strike out at God. And if people are mistreating people, or they're being more suspicious of them, or they're more rough with them because they have a certain skin color, that's a sin. It's wrong. You know, and the thing is, like, the history of missions in our country, you know, it's really sad. America started out pretty strong, had a pretty conservative, pretty biblical sense of missionary calling, and people really thought, you know, America, we have freedom here, and we don't have a state church, thank God we don't have a state church. And shame on anyone who thinks that we should have a state church. That's never been anything but a disaster everywhere it's ever been done. So, we allow for multi-form in denomination. People are independent. There are Baptists here. There are Presbyterians here. There's confessional Lutherans. So there's this whole mosaic of conservative, Bible-believing, gospel-believing Christian people here, and they have been able to have a huge missionary outreach to the whole world. We sent out missionaries everywhere and had great success doing that. We sent out people from all over the place to evangelize the world. But ever since the Second Great Awakening happened, ever since the church really tolerated Arminianism and has since embraced just the decisional regeneration garbage and the dispensationalism and the free willism and everything else, we've lost the gospel. We've lost the gospel. And because that's not preached anymore, now our culture is just dead. I mean, the church in the United States is not, I mean, it's really not leading much anymore. It's not issuing a biblical response to any of this kind of stuff. The fact of the matter is all this racial stuff, everything I just said about there being one race of human beings in the world, and we're all part of the one race of humanity, and from a Darwinian sense, you know, there aren't different, you know, apes that lived in different places that evolved into different looking humans. That's not true. We're all descended from Adam and Eve. That could solve a lot of these problems. Ottabanga, I'm looking at a picture of him. That makes me so sad. Ugh, that poor young man. They killed his children and kidnapped him and put him on display in a zoo because he was because of his real dark skin. They thought, well, he's as close to our ape-like ancestors as possible. The people that did that should have been executed for it. They should have been put to death for what they did to him. Absolutely intolerable that they did that to that. I can't look at that. It's going to make me cry. Go away. Ugh, how horrible is that? The people, the human beings could do that kind of thing to each other. Kidnap a man, kill his family, and put him on display in a zoo. All in the interest of science, in the interest of exploring the different trajectories of human evolution. Absolutely absurd. Absurd. So, terrible, terrible stuff. So, okay, let me pull up, was that everything that was asked there? How does the gospel answer those Black Lives Matter and the different things going on in the big cities? Well, the need for evangelism, obviously, is very great, and the need to recover a biblical worldview is very great, and the need to discard racist attitudes and being suspicious of people because they look different from you. That's always been a problem. That's always been a problem. In fact, remember there was a tennis player named Arthur Ashe, a black man, who got AIDS and died. I think from a blood transfusion, if I'm not mistaken. And I remember he made a statement. He said that of everything that he'd ever experienced in his life, nothing ever hurt him more than racist comments and the things that he experienced because he was a black man, the ill treatment that he got because he was a black man. And when I was in school, actually, I remember I read a book about, I think it was a journalist. It was a book called Black Like Me. And this guy underwent a bunch of treatments to make his skin very dark. And he went into the South, and this has been a long time ago, just to see the way black people were treated as a white man who was disguised as a black man. And it was appalling. It was absolutely heartbreaking to read that book, to see how they were treated, especially in the South, because they had dark skin. It's absolutely intolerable that people do that to each other. You know, we had a young man coming to our church here, and he was had a Mexican background. He told me he was a bit concerned about that because there were no other Mexican people in here. I said, we don't even believe in the concept of race. I mean, you're a human being with a pulse, just like I'm a human being with a pulse. So we look a little different. So what? We're both part of the same human family. We both need a savior. We're both sinful. We're both going to die because of sin, and we both need Jesus Christ to save us. And that was it. That was the end of it. And he was perfectly fine after that. So it's always such a joy to do that. The answer to this is so simple that it's frightening. There is no such thing as race, not in the Darwinian concept. There are ethnic groups, but there are different races in the sense that we're different trajectories of human evolution. There are different ethnic groups because people look different, that went to different parts of the world after God scattered people by their language differences. But now, with global communication and travel, you know, a lot of the races, a lot of the ethnic groups have been mingled and mixed together. That's a good thing. That's a great thing. When people from different backgrounds get married, I think that's a wonderful thing. It shows that we're all human beings. We're all part of the same family together. It doesn't matter. I have English roots and Scottish roots. My wife has continental roots. She is from a German-Polish background. So we look different from one another. But it's not like one of us has much darker skin than the other. But it wouldn't matter if we did. What difference does it make? So we have different melanin in our skin. It doesn't mean that I married someone who's a different race or a different type of being than I am or something like that. So that's the first thing. Okay, this individual also asked, we continue to witness, of course, and call all men to repentance, but what should we tell those who really want to hear our biblical answer to the injustices they see today, whether real or perceived injustices? I think one of the keys is not to append any adjectives to the word injustice, like social injustice. There's justice and there's injustice. If people are treated badly in the eyes of the law, if they're treated badly because they have different color skin, that's wrong. That is unjust. That is unjust, and that should not be. And certainly, any kind of attitudes that degrade people or dehumanize them because of the color of their skin are sinful. And the church needs to denounce that, and they need to move on from it big time. Okay, so good questions. And I got another question here from a person here at the church. And, oh, there's people in the channel now. Okay. I'm in a fork. I'm like a fork in a microwave on the beach. It says Claire Shackelford. I read her autobiography, and she hated blacks and poor people. She called them weeds of society. Yeah, we're talking about Margaret Sanger. You know, I think that Planned Parenthood just kind of, I think they kind of just hope nobody really knows who that is. No one knows who Margaret Sanger is. Because pretty much everything she ever said was nasty. You know, pretty much everything that woman ever said was nasty. In fact, let me read a quotation from her. I'm actually going to preach on abortion Sunday night, because we're coming up to the place in the book of Exodus where Pharaoh orders the killing of the male children there in Israel. When the Israelites were there in Egypt, they ordered the killing of all male children. Yeah, listen to this. She said this. In her own words, the purpose of the American Birth Control League, okay, a.k.a. Planned Parenthood. She said, quote, "Our objective is unlimited sexual gratification without the burden of unwanted children. Women must have the right to live, to love, to be lazy, to be an unmarried mother, to create, to destroy. The marriage bed is the most degenerative influence in the social order. The most merciful thing that a family does to one of its infant members is to kill it." sweet lady. Sweet lady. What a heartwarming, sweet, kind person. Everything she ever wrote was nasty. I mean, you just randomly open the book. I've got The Pivot of Civilization. Yeah, I can see it right there. Pivot of Civilization. Every other page in there is just venom. This woman just hated everything good in this world. Unbelievable person. And Planned Parenthood still tries to deny its racist roots. And I'm sorry, the documentation is too thorough to get around it. It's everywhere. It's easy to find. It's easy to expose. Okay. Ryan Smith. Hey, man. What's up? It's ironic because leftists reject science when gender dysphoria is involved, yet mock Christians for their unscientific belief in a sky daddy. Yeah, good point. I was listening to The World and Everything in It, and which is the World Magazine's daily podcast. It's a pretty good news program thing. They were talking about, what's her name, J.K. Rowling, the author of the Harry Potter series. She's a feminist, but she doesn't like the transgender stuff. Think about the conflict here. Here you have feminism that wants to elevate women and say that there's, you know, the gender roles that have been assigned to them by society are patriarchal, misogynistic, and blah, 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 blah. She doesn't like the idea that a man can become a woman. And she's like, that's not the case. Feminism is predicated on the idea that femininity is a real thing, is a fixed part of a person's identity. I've always wondered that. When is the trans agenda going to run into feminism? And it's happening. And what's hilarious is that Emma Watson and the other actors from the Harry Potter movies are rising up and slashing and burning J.K. Rowling now because she's transphobic. But she's transphobic because she's a feminist. Because she thinks that women are a real thing that can't be anything other than what they are. And I just think that that's kind of funny. So, who wins in that fight? That beats me. That's going to be ugly, and it is ugly. Emma Watson, the girl that plays Hermione, is that how you say it? Hermione in the Harry Potter series. She's attacking J.K. Rowling because everybody realizes, of course, there are no greater experts alive than famous actors and actresses, right? They're all scholars of everything, and we should listen to everything they say. Famous actors and actresses, I could not possibly care less what they have to say about anything. Okay, but yeah, belief in Sky Daddy. All right, let's get to the next question here. Got to score more, but yeah, Ryan, thank you, got to score more victim points. That was another point I was going to make. When I was talking about people being the need to be self-governing, we are a country of victims. The rising generation really doesn't think that it's responsible for anything it does. If they do something stupid, it's because mom and dad potty trained me late in life. It's because somebody spanked me too hard once. Everything is someone else's fault. We're a country of victims and blame shifters, and it's terrible. We are responsible for what we do. We're responsible for what we do. And people do this all the time with family members. Well, he has shell shock from World War II. Really? So that gives him the right to mistreat everyone in his family? No. Well, he went through this hard thing or that hard thing when he was a child. That's why it's okay for them to be abusive. No, it's not. We are responsible for what we do. We are not victims. Okay? If an excuse really is a good excuse, if it actually is legitimate, if people can make excuses for the way they live their lives and for their sins, if those excuses are legitimate, then they will be legitimate with God. So on the day of judgment, people can stand up and say, well, people mistreated me when I was a kid, so that's why I've been cruel and heartless to everybody. And God will be like, oh, okay, well, you're fine then, come on in. Of course not. We are responsible for what we do, but we always want to play the victim. People who are able to make something of themselves, they take responsibility for what they are and what they do. I want to tell you something. If I lose my temper and raise my voice at my kids didn't make me do that. You know, the blood-curdling squeals of one of my little kids when I'm trying to change their diaper, if it makes me mad, if I act out because I'm mad, it's my fault. If I get upset about something, if I mistreat my wife, if I'm insensitive to her, It's not because she made me do that. And it's not because my parents, it's not because society, it's not because my friends weren't friendly enough. I am responsible for what I do. Every time. Every time. But our culture doesn't like that. Our culture wants to shift the blame to everyone else. Everyone else is at fault because I am the way I am. And I say, no, we are responsible for everything we do, every single time. We can't blame anyone but ourselves for the decisions we freely make. So if people mistreat others, they are responsible for it. No matter what their background or what they've been through, they are responsible for it. That's the key to understanding this great, grand, wonderful experiment called American liberty that we have. It doesn't work if people don't self-govern. If you want the government to fix everything and take care of you and hold your hand from the cradle to the grave, this is not the right country for you. People came here because they were sick of government. They wanted to take care of themselves. They didn't want the government to educate their kids or give them health care or feed or clothe them. They didn't want that at all. They wanted to come here and do their own thing and worship God and work hard and pass their inheritance on to their kids. They didn't want to sponsor 1,000 government programs. They didn't want to do that. The people that came here had a great deep faith in God. That's why the government was so small back then. But as people have moved away from God, guess what gets bigger? The more people turn away from God, the true God, what gets bigger? Government. So people are never without religion. They just deify something else. If people won't submit to God, they're going to be governed by the state. Remember, even Ben Franklin, who was not a Christian, but he did believe that he believed in the existence of the Christian God, at least, somewhat. He made this statement, very famous statement, either you'll be governed by God, or by God you'll be governed. Meaning, either you all take responsibility for yourself, or the government is going to grow tentacles and stick its hands in everything in your life. What's the problem? People don't self-govern anymore. That's the problem. Junior Balling says, actors make their lives pretending. They make their living pretending. That's right, they do. And they pretend to have insight into things that they know nothing about, obviously. Like ethics and morals and the way people should live their lives and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Okay. All right, next question here. Someone else has some questions. All right. Number one, we keep hearing how we live in unprecedented times. Do you think the days we live in are really any harder or scarier than other times in the history of the world? No, I don't. I don't. We have it pretty easy, actually. They may be unprecedented in the history of our country, but not unprecedented for Christians. Christians have dealt with like horrifying circumstances throughout their history, especially in those early centuries. There were, from the time of Nero, there were 10 Roman emperors in a row that at various times and in various locations unleashed brutal persecution against Christian people. Christians under communist regimes in Russia and in China and in other places, Cambodia and other places where communism went, Christians that live under in Islamic areas experience incredible persecution, and their lives are regularly in danger. So, no, as far as being an American today, our lives are not harder or scarier than other times in the history of the world. In fact, the fact is we still have it pretty easy here. We have a pretty posh life. I mean, I'm not worried someone's going to come in here and start shooting at people. It could happen, I guess. But I'm not worried about that. I mean, I'm going to drive home today and see my family and all will be well. I don't worry about that kind of thing. So no, I don't think that there are unprecedented times in the broad spectrum of world history. No. Certainly weird for America. Yeah, the revolutionaries in the terms of the crazy stuff they're asking for. I always tell people, what they want in terms of the LGBT revolution and all this government involvement and everything. Is going to result in national suicide. What's the end result? Homosexuality and transgenderism, what does that produce? Gravestones with people in them? They don't have descendants. They don't want any. Our abortion death culture that wants to self-mutilate and engage in perverted forms of sex that don't result in babies being born, the culture's going to die. It's going to die. That's where it's going. The birth rate in America is lower than it's ever been. We are officially dying as a country now. We're not replacing ourselves. And one thing that I've always been a little bit concerned about, you know, you think about a culture like America that's been as blessed as it has been, and we've murdered, what, probably 75 to 80 million unborn children since Roe versus Wade, which was a Supreme Court decision, had no legislative authority at all, none, zero, and shouldn't have, and every single state in this country should have thumbed their nose at it and been like, so what, you made a dumb decision at the Supreme Court level? We have no obligation to change our laws, but they did. Struck down the anti-abortion laws in the states, and there's been a bloodbath ever since, about 75, 80 million babies dead. And also, I would point out, through the use of intrauterine devices, which are not contraceptives, they are abortifacients, they cause abortions, and birth control pills, you probably killed 70 to 80 million more. So somewhere between 140 and 160 million dead babies that would have been working, paying into things like Social Security and stuff like that, when the elderly, when there's no money left to take care of them, what are we going to do? What is our government going to do? You think that a government that has sanctioned the murder of 140 million of its citizens is going to care at all about the elderly when they need care and they're old, and they'll say, well, your life's not worth living anymore anyway. Plus, we don't have any money. Yeah, you know, we killed the workforce that would have been paying into all of these government programs since they're all dead and weren't even allowed to be born here. I guess we're going to kill all you too. So then it'll be 3,000 babies a day and 1,500 elderly people a day put to death. Culture doesn't care about its young and its elderly. It's the most vulnerable in its society. I mean, there is a generation whose teeth are like knives to devour the poor from off the earth, it says in Proverbs 30. That's our generation now. It's utterly ruthless. It has no concern, no care, no compassion for the innocents, for human life, for babies, and it's so obsessed with self-gratification and sex and pleasure that they'll sacrifice anything and everything, which makes sense if you're a Darwinist, if you're an evolutionist. Why not? Why not? It's just bags of biological goo, you know, so if one bag of biological goo runs into another bag of biological goo and one forgets to say, excuse me, so what? See, the Christian World and Life View says children are a blessing. All of them should be welcomed into this world. The Christian worldview, the Christian gospel, the Bible, teaches that sex is not a right. Sex is not a right. I should preach a sermon called Sex is Not a Right. It's a privilege for the married and for the married only. Sex is not a right. It's a privilege for married people. And it carries with it certain responsibilities, such as a child being conceived. And if you have a child, you are obligated to take care of that child, to love that child. So sex is not a right. Single people are not allowed to have sex. Married people are not allowed to have sex outside of their marriage. Sex is not a right. It is a privilege for the married only. And for the only kind of marriage there is, which is a man to a woman. One man, one woman. And it carries with it responsibility. If a child's conceived, that's a blessing. That's a good thing. That's not a bad thing. Now, our culture, because it's narcissistic and crazy and self-centered, well, we don't want babies. We don't want them because they're a pain and they keep us up late at night and they make the bags under my eyes bigger. And I'm tired of getting baby poop on my fingers every morning. You know what? I am too. I am too at times. But what does that mean? That means I need to quit being selfish and recognize God has called me to the service of others. God has called me to love others. God has called me to love my children, to love my wife, and to do so in a self-sacrificial way. And that's hard because everything in my flesh and in my sinful heart wants everything to be just the way I want it. So often, you know, young men at the church up there in Ohio, there is a much bigger church than this one. See young guys in their late 20s, early 30s, and they're single, and man, they're a mess. Emotionally a mess, struggling with, you know, all kinds of stuff. It finally hit me, these guys need to get married, have some kids. That'll be good for them, because it helps you grow up. It helps you realize life's not about you. Life's not about you getting everything you want when you want it. Life is about self-sacrifice. Life is about loving and devoting yourself to your wife and loving her in exactly the way she needs you to love her, so that she glows like she did when you asked her to marry her, so she glows like she did when you saw her at the back of the church or on the side of the mountain, Nathan, when you married my daughter. So she glows like that and has that big eye-popping smile for the rest of her life. And I'm sorry, but a man can have perfect theology and know the Bible backwards and forwards. If he doesn't love his wife well, that knowledge is doing him no more good than giving medicine to a dead man. You want to know how well a man's walking with Christ? Look at his wife. Is she happy? Does she feel loved? Does he see it as his mission in life to bring out the best in her? That's one of the things that's so important about marriage, is it forces, you know, young, immature men to become men, to grow up, to quit thinking about, you know, video games, and to quit thinking about your hobbies, and to devote your life to the service of another human being, to another person. But, you know, our culture is narcissistic and crazy. Everything's about me. Everything's about myself, my happiness. And, you know, I need to find out who I am. I need to fornicate a few times and find out who I am. Who you are is a sinner. You need Christ. You need to be saved. You need to forget yourself. You need to die to self and live for the God who made you and created you in his image and gave you commands that are hard, told you to climb mountains that are steep, told you to go do things that are counterintuitive to your selfish pride and to your selfish desires. Go love a woman, and love her with all your heart. To the one woman, go love that man that you're married to. Love him with all your heart. Now, I know there's all kinds of things that happen. You know, life is devastating, and it's hard, and there's things that are really tough. But the fact is, we don't live in unprecedented times. Okay, we don't live in unprecedented times. Is it safe to say that every day when people repent and believe and become followers of Christ Jesus, that we are living in unprecedented times and that there's never been this many Christians on earth before? Yes, I do think that. I think there's never been more Christians in the world than there are right now. However, I will say I don't think there's very many Christians in America anymore, because the gospel's not preached here anymore. All the ecumenical activity with Roman Catholicism and all of its idolatry and its false gospel and all that garbage, and, you know, Federal Vision runs rampant, you know, Piperism with the initial justification by faith, final salvation by fruit, and nobody calls it out in the Reformed celebrity cult. Gospel's just not preached much in this country, and because of that, not many people are saved here. But from what I've read and what I've heard, the gospel is really thriving in South Africa, India, in South Korea, and in China. And I'm thinking, eventually, Korea, China, and those places, they'll probably send some missionaries here to evangelize the church here. Justification by faith alone is the gospel. If we're not preaching that with passion, with frequency, and if we're not calling for people to repent and believe the one true gospel, there are no Christians here. But there are a lot throughout the rest of the world, though. I think that America is in a season of serious spiritual decline. And I, in my lifetime, I've never seen anything like the lack of discernment, especially in reform circles that I see today. And it really breaks my heart. I always looked at so many men as being my heroes, and almost all of them have let me down. Almost all of them have just failed, to do what I thought all Christians would do. And that would be to defend the gospel and preach the gospel and make sure that we protect it and that we uphold it and preach it. Okay. Last question here. Excuse me. How can we change the narrative from disease, death, violence, lawlessness to being encouraged by knowing that the church, the bride of Christ, will always prevail? It's hard to find much out there that's reminding us of that. How can we change the narrative from disease, death, violence, and lawlessness? It'd be nice to have some news outlets that actually reported positive things occasionally, instead of focusing on all the yuck, yuck, gross death stuff and disease and violence and lawlessness and everything being destroyed and torn down and set on fire. It'd be nice to get some news outlets that would actually report encouraging things as well as concerning things. But all what the church needs to do is strengthen its fellowship with one another. I'm sad to say, the coronavirus, I think we've been manipulated some by the media. I don't think it's as serious as you know, as many people are thinking and saying. I think a lot of fear has been used. And I, you know, we're still going to take precautions for a while and really try to, you know, we want to be sensitive to people and help the people that feel especially vulnerable to it. But the coronavirus has done something much worse than infecting people. The coronavirus, to me, has pointed out some of the weaknesses of the church. If something like that can cause people to just hate their church and walk away from the church, that's concerning to me. It makes me wonder how strong the church really is. And that's what I kept thinking. As the data kept coming in and we were like looking at it as a session, I thought, man, there's no way we can make a decision that's going to make everybody happy. No matter what we decide, people are going to have a problem with it. So, you know, I was kind of like ready to deal with it. Like, you know, I think people are going to be upset by this. I was pleasantly surprised here at our church, though, because I got around 10 handwritten letters letting me know that people are praying for me. They're encouraged that we care about them, that we're trying to do the right thing. They're praying that God will give us wisdom and help us. And that was encouraging. It's a lot of texts from people on my phone, a lot of emails from people thanking us and encouraging us. I was really happy with that. I really was surprised and very happy with the outflow of love that happened here in our church. But I think that there's also been significant division in some Christian circles, and people are very upset about various things with regard to the coronavirus and how the church has responded to it. And if something like that can cause the church to implode or cause a local church to die, it's because that church, there wasn't a whole lot of love in that church to begin with, in my opinion. So, to change the narrative from disease, death, violence, and lawlessness, we need to focus on fellowship with one another and doing outreach and evangelism, inviting friends and family, coworkers to church that don't know Christ, and doing more evangelism so that we see people coming to Christ, we see people being strengthened in their walk with Christ, and we can see men being raised up for ministry and churches being built and planted. That's why I've been praying and praying and praying that we'd be able to do phase two of our expansion project here, because it'd be great to get a bigger room. Last Sunday, you know, the first full Sunday, we've had no restrictions as far as staggering the letters of the alphabet, people's last names or anything like that. We had a couple rows in the back that were reserved if people were concerned about social distancing. But still, we had a lot of people here. The place looked packed. I was really encouraged by that. I think once this is over and everybody's here and everyone's in town, we're not going to fit in this room anymore. And I keep thinking, we've got to pull the trigger on this expansion project and get this room bigger so we can maximize the land that we have here, and then that's it. And I really believe if we do that, God will fill this place up. My goal is to pour my heart and soul into my preaching ministry and just really let the text of Scripture speak. Like to change the narrative from death, disease, violence, lawlessness, we need churches where the Bible is believed, the Bible is loved, and you see people excited to walk through the Bible, to walk through the Scriptures and learn from them. That's the thing that people need more than anything in order to change the narrative from all the yuck, 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 violence, disease, death, and change it to God is doing great things. God is blessing the proclamation of His word. People are hearing the truth and being saved, and people are growing in their relationships with God and their marriage and family relationships and all the rest of it. So, and yes, indeed, the church will always prevail. The church may get reduced in this country to just a small group, but it won't be extinguished completely here. God has things in store, I think, for the church in America. Okay. Let's see. Alrighty. That's about it as far as questions for the 54-minute mark. And thank you, everybody, for listening and for watching. And we'll try to do this again soon. And thank you for the questions. This is Pastor Patrick Hines of Verdol Heights Presbyterian Church, and you've been listening to the Pulpit Supplemental Podcast. You can find us on the web at www.verdolheightspca.org. Our sermons are streamed through Sermon Audio, and you can listen to that on the iTunes podcast version of Verdol Heights Presbyterian Church. Feel free to join us any Sunday morning for worship at 11 a.m. sharp at 108 Verdol Heights Road in Kingsport, Tennessee. And may the Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make His face to shine upon you and be gracious unto you. The Lord lift up His countenance upon you and give you peace.